Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, February 10th, 2020. I'm joined, as always, by Alex Brown. Alex, how's your week been?
Very good, Graham. No rain this week.
No rain in England. All right. We'll note that on the calendar. So last week was a really big week. You know, we had Harvard Business School giving out interview invitations and, you know, I guess London Business School as well. I mean, there's been a lot of activity as well as all the schools that are just trickling things out. But this week looks to be exciting too. What's on the horizon this week?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, last week was very, lots of engagement and posts on LiveWire related to Harvard Business School and, you know, a couple of other schools, but mostly Harvard. And this week, another big school, Wharton, will be releasing its interview invites later on this week. So that's, again, very exciting to see all this activity.
Agreed. So in other news, I guess, you know, we're obviously continue to be in the midst of interview season. So yeah. In addition to people getting word, they're prepping and hopefully their friends are helping prepare and doing mock interviews and things like that. We've actually recorded a couple of extra podcasts that I wanted to call people's attention to. One is I sat down last week with a Kellogg professor to talk about the Super Bowl commercials. And so I don't know if everyone's seen that, but it is out and encourage you to listen to that if you have any curiosity around advertising or how kind of brands position themselves. And then another one that's not yet out, but I'm going to just as a little teaser for our podcast faithful, we've got an episode coming out where I sat down with the admissions director at Columbia Business School, Michael Robinson, and we had a really good time talking about everything from why they have that ED round to essay tips to his preferences in hip-hop music. So it's going to be a good episode, so stay tuned for that. Other news, I guess tomorrow we have a Tuck chat on the website, which people should tune in for. I believe they're going to have some current students that are going to be available to interact with people in the Clear Admit community. So stay tuned for that on the website. You might have to sign up in advance. It's pitiful. I don't actually know. But just head to the website. I'm sure there's a process for getting on board for that. And then, Alex, the last thing I wanted to say is, have you been writing reviews for this podcast? Because they've just started to come in a bit of a flurry. And I sort of wondered if, like, I don't know, is this like you, your family members? Because they're really glowing and they always mention how great we are. So I just kind of wondered where these are coming from.
Yeah, my writing skills aren't that good, actually, Graham. If you read them carefully, you know it's not me.
And it's definitely not me. No one in my family has any time to do this kind of thing. So, but I did want to read one out, and it just because it was really touching, and we just love to get this kind of feedback. I can't even say the person's name because their handle is, I'm going to try. It's like, I guess it's Lohusaher. So I'm wondering if it's like a long way of saying, I don't know, loser. I'm not sure like why that would be someone's handle. But in any event, the title of the review was A Refreshing Dose of Demystifying the MBA Application Process. And this person starts by saying, Alex and Graham are the real deal. Clearly, he or she has never met us. So, so Alex and Graham are the real deal. These guys are incredibly helpful and candid. They really care about the outcomes of those folks who are seeking clarity on their MBA candidacy and their future careers. This resource continues to pay dividends every single time I listen to it. It has really helped drive clarity around my personal MBA journey and how to approach tests, schools, applications, post-MBA careers, extracurriculars, on and on I could go. Do yourself a favor, hit subscribe, and listen to them. They add value in all aspects of thinking through business school. Thanks, Alex and Graham. So I just want to say we really appreciate that review and whoever wrote it. Thank you so much for submitting that. I suspect if you spent a lot of time with Alex and I, you might get sick of us, but I'm glad that you're enjoying the podcast every week. Alex, yeah, this is great. I don't know what we did to get these reviews, but...
Yeah, but one thing I really enjoyed about that particular review, Graham, is the recognition that we do care. And, you know, I feel, and hopefully a lot of our listeners feel this way about their work. I'm passionate about what we do. I really enjoy it and I care about it. So I'm glad that sort of does appear to sort of come through in this podcast series.
Yeah, and I mean, joking aside, because I know we like to joke a little bit, I agree. I mean, I have always felt that this process of applying to business school, it's not a game that you have to like figure out some secret, you know, backdoor in, which I think a lot of people, a lot of admissions consultants, or there are folks out there that try to kind of present it as that. I think of this as like a learning experience, and the MBA is a means to an end, you know, in terms of figuring out what you want to do with your career and helping you get there. So I love hearing about people's personal journeys. And, you know, that actually reminds me, speaking of personal journeys, we have another kind of chapter in the Real Humans series that we published on the site, which is now kind of Real Humans MBA alums. And so we've actually connected with dozens of folks who've graduated from leading MBA programs and are now working at the very companies that ClearAdmit community members are most interested in joining post-MBA. And you can see on the site, I think we've already launched a handful. There's a woman from Stanford who works at Google. There's a woman that graduated from Wharton who's now at McKinsey. And these are just, you know, asking them questions about like, how did they end up in their job and what did they do in the recruiting process to get there and how did the MBA help them? So we're trying to really give people more of those personal journeys, because I really think that resonates with our listeners and readers.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, fascinating reading just right off the bat. I was super impressed by both those folks.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be it's just amazing to see, because we have a bunch more on deck from all kinds of companies, you know, Apple, Facebook, I mean, all, you know, Goldman, they're all coming. So stay tuned. Before we move into our, you know, kind of wiretaps, where we're going to feature a couple apply wires and one decision wire this week, I wanted to just remind our audience that our podcast sponsor is the evening and weekend program at the Kellogg School of Management. You can reach your highest career goals while earning an MBA part-time. The evening and weekend MBA program at the Kellogg School of Management is conveniently located at their downtown Chicago campus and offers flexible study options to fit your lifestyle and match your experience. By graduation, you share the same toolkit, skills, and network as the school's most prominent alumni. Everyone can visit kellogg.northwestern.edu/EW to learn more. So thanks to Kellogg. Alex, let's go backwards, if you will, this week, and we'll start with a decision wire entry, and then we'll do our two apply wire entries, if that's okay with you.
Sounds great.
All right. So this is your wiretaps candidate number one. So this is a decision wire entry, and it's from a candidate who is not decided about where they want to go. They've been accepted to Carnegie Mellon, that's the Tepper School, USC Marshall, UT Austin McCombs, and in terms of where they applied, I think it looks like those were the three that they applied to. So they ran the, they got in everywhere, right, ran the table. They're going to be starting this fall, and they're just trying to decide. They want to work in consulting after business school, and ideally, and maybe tech. So they've got a bunch of companies on their list, BCG, McKinsey, Facebook, Google, Microsoft. GMAT score was 750 and the GPA 3.7. So really, you know, great stats. Located in the UK. And the person writes that they've been working in the automotive sector as an electronics engineer for 5 years. Half of that in India and half of it more recently in the UK. And post-MBA, they want to transition to product management or tech strategy in the tech industry. So I don't know why. I guess they have these consulting firms, but it sounds like they're mostly focused on the tech angle. They said that, I guess, if they don't make tech, they would be willing to look at like tech consulting. So maybe they would join, like they say, a McKinsey or BCG and try to work with tech companies. So one of the issues that this person is weighing is the kind of, you know, visa, because it sounds like they want to stay in the U.S. And just so that everyone is clear, the scholarship numbers that they were offered were $80,000 from Tepper, $100,000 from USC Marshall, and $70,000 from UT Austin McCombs. So I actually weighed in on this one, but I'm curious what you think, because it's a, you know, it's an interesting dilemma, and this person has more than the usual considerations, I would say, when they're trying to weigh this out.
Yeah, I mean, if it is in fact the case that this candidate did get admitted to all the schools they applied and didn't just, you know, not include some of the other schools they applied that they didn't get admitted to. If that is the case, then I would argue that maybe they should have considered aiming a little bit higher In terms of their application strategy. So clearly they've done very well getting admitted at Tepper, Marshall and McCombs, all very good schools, all what I would consider in that sort of top 20 category for US business schools. And perhaps they could have, you know, gone after the sort of top 16 category. But that aside, to the point, of this candidate, like I say, great numbers, 753, 7 GPA, presumably decent work experience and so on and so forth. In terms of where they should go with the offers that they have, the first thing that struck me, Graham, is one, I think Tepper is, I would argue Tepper looks like the better choice. From a very sort of pragmatic standpoint, it's, you know, reputation for sort of technology and digital strategy and so on and so forth. I think Tepper might win out a little bit. I mean, McCombs is very good. Marshall is very good. They're all sort of very comparable. But I think Tepper has the slight edge, and it has the STEM designation, I believe, that would give the candidate more freedom and flexibility for working in the States post-MBA. The other thing that I would factor in, and this is probably hard for this candidate, is geographically, Pittsburgh and Austin and LA are very different cities. You know, sometimes people in Texas think they're in their own country, and LA is certainly very different to Pittsburgh. From a cost of living standpoint, you know, you've got to imagine being at Tepper is going to be considerably less expensive, certainly to LA, and I presume to Austin, although I'm not absolutely sure on that. So there are other factors to consider also, but I did sort of, when I read through this thing, my initial thought was Tepper does look like the more favorable option.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think the other thing you could argue is that Tepper often, you know, I know it's hard to kind of really, and we don't believe in a strictly ordinal ranking, right? And it's hard to separate some of these schools because they're kind of in similar tiers. But I actually would argue that Tepper might be one notch up if you look at, you know, historical rankings and things. Like they have, you know, graced the kind of top 15 or been close to it on several occasions, right? So they're arguably a slightly better regarded program. Although, again, these are all great schools. And USC in particular has been making waves, you know, coming, you know, kind of moving up in the rankings and things. I will agree with you that not only is Pittsburgh probably the cheapest place for this person to locate to, it's also probably closest to India. They're trying to get back, you know, from time to time. So that might be a consideration. The thing that I go back to, though, is the STEM, you know, STEM certification, right? In the sense that this is an Indian national who has worked in the UK but doesn't have UK nationality. And so they, you know, they're going to try to stay in the US, and it'll be easier if they, you know, get a job in a tech company and it's STEM designated, and you know, the school, you know, this would allow them to stay for like 3 years, which gives them ample time to try to get sponsored and stay longer if they want. The only thing that I was going to mention is that, you know, they have this interesting automotive background for literally 5 years. And I not only could that background be of interest to some of the consulting firms that might hire them, but I personally wondered whether they should be throwing their hat in the ring to try to get that kind of a job with a U.S. automaker, whether it's, you know, Tesla or Ford. It doesn't matter. But it sounds like they want to kind of move in a different direction. But if their primary goal is to stay in the U.S., then leveraging that 5 years of automotive experience might actually play well, and they might even find a firm that's willing to sponsor them right out of the gate, or, you know, certainly if they have the 3 years, they'll have ample time. So I just wanted to make sure they're not closing the door on that, because sometimes having that sort of specialized background can open doors. So just as an aside, and they might say, you know what, I hate the automotive sector. I've been there for 5 years. It's the last thing I want to do. And that's fine. A lot of people use business school to pivot. But I just wanted to remind them that if they're really trying to get a green card, a nationality, and stay in the U.S. or something, that might be a way to do it in a effective way, at least. We'll see.
Yeah, no, I think you make a very good point. I also think Pittsburgh, you know, its reputation I think the place is rejuvenated, and it's sort of really sort of developing, and it's quite exciting there now, despite the fact that the cost of living is still relatively inexpensive. So, and it's also a good soft landing place for international students, I think, in that regard.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I'm a fan. I mean, it's a small city. It's cheap. It's on the up. Yeah, they've had a real renaissance, and there's some great things to do there. But you know, I'm from Philly, so obviously, you know, I like these kind of gritty cities on the kind of eastern part of the U.S. So in any event, great post. Appreciate that person sharing, and it's, you know, it's challenging. I guess the one thing we didn't mention is that, you know, Tepper's also giving them $80,000, and you know, while USC beats that slightly at the 100K level, McCombs is less than that. So I think if we're looking at the money, you know, you might have to say, well, is it USC or Tepper? And then it becomes even clearer in the sense that, you know, Tepper's typically been viewed as a stronger program. So, yeah, I think this sort of shakes out to be Tepper. And we weren't the only ones who chimed in and said that on the forum. So there you have it. So, yeah, let's move on. We're going to talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is an Apply Wire entry, and the person is applying to Cornell, Tuck, Georgetown, NYU Stern, UVA Darden, and Yale SOM. They are not planning to start until 2021, which means they're going to be, you know, spending the next year or so getting their applications in and figuring out where they're going. Pre-MBA career has been in management consulting and business advisory. Post-MBA, looking to get into investment banking with all the usual suspects, Bank of America, Barclays, Citibank, JP Morgan, Merrill, Morgan, JP Morgan Chase. So they're all here. I guess JP Morgan's listed twice. I'm not sure why. Maybe they doubly want to end up there. GPA 3.15 and years of work experience 4. This person's located in DC, would love to end up in Boston or New York. And I have to say, the first thing they mentioned in their comment is they said they're a huge fan of the podcast and that they travel weekly from DC to do their kind of management consulting assignments. And they've listened to every podcast to date and over the last like 3 weeks, which, I mean, we have now binge listeners, Alex. I'm shocked.
I like that. And obviously that's why we selected this profile, and I'll tell you, Graham, I didn't write this profile either.
Right. So the person says that I guess he's going to be applying, you know, next fall, right? So he's got to still take a standardized test, and he's projecting a score of around 324, but is willing to take it multiple times in hopes of like eclipsing that 330 mark, which is very elusive, obviously, as we know. So I don't want to, there's a lot of detail here. We don't have to get into all of it, but to me, the key issue is this GPA, and he did mention that he has an upward trend and that he was a Division I lacrosse player, and, you know, that I guess he also had some personal stuff going on, you know, so what's, you want to kind of shed some light on that and yeah, just talk about this candidate, because it's an interesting, you know, quandary with this GPA.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of issues here, the GPA, and then there was a gap in their employment when they went home to sort of recover from an eating disorder. So in terms of the GPA, yes, it's on the lighter side, 3.15. We know that. And, you know, the candidate to sort of help balance that is obviously going to try to blow the GRE out of the water and even suggest that they're going to take it several times and try to push for that 330. That will help, no doubt. There's some context to the 3.15 GPA, as well as being a Division I athlete, which I think does clearly help. There's, in terms of, you know, what the AgCom is looking for. But, you know, a 3.15 GPA can't just be as a result of being a Division I athlete, because, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to show that you can balance time, manage time, do multiple things whilst you're at school, because that's what you're going to be asked to do whilst you're in your MBA program. I believe there were other extenuating, some personal circumstances with family. And as you said, there's an upward trajectory as well as a decent, almost decent GPA within the major and so forth. But it will always be a challenge. You could argue, Graham, I suppose, that the candidate might you know, want to take one or two classes, get A's now to show that that's their sort of academic motivation at this point. That's something that they could possibly consider doing. The refrain from doing that is all of their, I believe all of their undergraduate was in sort of business sort of type coursework. So it would be hard to find the exactly the right type of courses to take, I guess, to show that. The other area I wanted to focus on is the candidate was very open and honest about having an eating disorder, which meant that they left their first work position after 8 months and then spent, it looks to me, like 3 or 4 months at home recovering from this issue. And I don't know, you know, frankly, I don't have empathy. I've not been through something like that myself, so I'm not sure what the challenges are. But I'm sure it can be debilitating and so on and so forth. So, you know, making sure that they're upfront about this is important, and they are being very upfront about this particular issue. As an ADCOM, as I'm reading this, my first sort of concern will be, what are the triggers, and will this situation reoccur during our very sort of intensive 2-year MBA experience? So it will be important for the candidate to allay those concerns, which I'm sure they can. But I think this is the case for any candidate that's sort of presenting past challenges in their life that might have disrupted, you know, them from their more traditional pathway. Making sure that the triggers that presented those challenges aren't triggers that will reoccur in the MBA program. I also like the fact that the candidate seems to have done some pretty decent stuff in their extracurriculars to sort of support their communities and to reach out. So that I think plays well in their favour. The general advice I'd offer this candidate, which I think I did directly on ApplyWire, is that they're planning to apply next year. So very standard advice, you know, go to your supervisor or whomever's helping assign your work, get on really challenging projects over the next year, really push yourself, as well as in your extracurriculars, continue to do good things that show that you're passionate and that you care about stuff. And again, if you can ratchet up that aspect of your candidacy, that will, again, improve your overall candidacy. So, yeah, these were some of the points that I wanted to make sure that we covered when addressing this particular candidate's journey, which obviously has a couple of wrinkles in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make all the right points here. The GPA is low. It could be somewhat addressed by a really stellar GRE or GMAT score. So they have to do that. That would be great. And I like the storyline of, you know, they had like a 2.6 freshman year, but by the time they graduated, they had a 3.4 in their major. So they definitely have this upward trend, and they can explain that. I'm also a fan. They went to the University of Richmond, they mentioned, which is a nice liberal arts college, and a pretty challenging one too. So I think it's not a place that's sort of like noted for incredible grade inflation or anything like that. So I think it's a good school. It also happens to be a school that has my favorite mascot, because their mascot is a spider, which just you don't see many you know, kind of spiders as mascots. So I had a chance to be on the campus not too long ago and appreciated that. But in any event, yeah. So there is this academic concern. But they did study marketing and finance, and so they presumably have some nice grades in that domain that they can point to if they had a 3.4 overall. And then, yeah, as you say, that kind of gap in their work experience and, you know, it being due to, you know, kind of the eating disorder, just being upfront about that, I think will go miles. And, yeah, they just need to explain, you know, what was going on and ideally how they kind of, you know, handled it and have that kind of buttoned up so that it's not something that's going to kind of resurface and prevent them from excelling in business school.
And perhaps how it's helped shape who they are today. So if their extracurriculars are based off of their experience through the eating disorder, which it's not quite clear to me if they are or not, but if they are, then that sort of helps sort of show that they've grown from that particular experience and maybe contributing back to others that face similar challenges.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think, you know, look, one thing we didn't really talk about is the school selection, given that they want to work in banking, makes sense. I mean, they've got a lot of the usual suspects, whether it's Cornell or Stern, Yale, obviously strong there. Dartmouth has a nice network in New York for those kinds of jobs, and Boston. So they have a good list of schools given this weakness. I mean, you know, one might say, gee, where's like Booth or Wharton or Columbia, which are other schools that have been known to, you know, place people in banking roles too. But I guess the candidate is probably just assuming that they're out of, you know, out of range because of the GPA issue. I personally, if I were them, I would actually take a flyer on at least one of those kind of M7 type, you know, programs for finance, just to see. You never know. And, you know, depending on how the test goes.
Yeah, a good application strategy is that you get denied at least one program. Otherwise, you perhaps didn't try hard enough. Other than the fact that if you get, you know, admitted to Harvard or Stanford or possibly Wharton, then perhaps that gets blown out of the window. But yeah, if this person did apply to these six schools and get admitted across the board, they're only going to wonder whether they should have gone Columbia Early Decision or something like that to really sort of challenge themselves in the process.
And great point. I was talking with Michael Robinson, who's director of admissions at Columbia, recording a podcast that will come out soon. And he did say, like, if you have something in your background, a low test score, a low GPA, or something that's, you know, a little below the average, applying early decision is a great way to kind of signal, you know, that this is where you want to be. And that they have more flexibility early in the process to make exceptions and build that class, right? So, yeah, that's a really good piece of advice. So, best of luck to this person. Thanks for the feedback on the podcast. And, you know, I don't know if there's, hopefully they're okay after having binge listened to so many episodes. all right. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person is currently applying to business school. They submitted applications in round 2 to Ross, Kellogg, Stanford, UCLA, and Wharton. And they've been working in nonprofit, and after business school, they're hoping to do nonprofit, social impact, or maybe even entrepreneurship as kind of a career. GRE score, 317, GPA, 3.38, and this person has 6 years of work experience. Again, they applied to these programs on their list in round 2, and they're hoping to pivot to private sector social impact work after 6 years on the nonprofit side, with the last 2.5 as an executive director with a nonprofit. And they also have a really strong interest in branding and marketing and entrepreneurship, just as kind of a sidebar there. So you engaged with this person on the wire here. So what did you have, what do you think about this? Because this is, it's an interesting case, you know, kind of a cool background and yeah. But what do you think of this person?
Yeah, again, as I've mentioned and we've mentioned a few times on this podcast, this will be the sort of candidate the AgComs will be rooting for. They'll like their sort of professional background. It's different. It differentiates them. And it does appear that the person, I don't know if we know if it's male or female, but the person has significant leadership roles in their 6 years of professional experience to date. But in any event, when we're sort of looking at these candidates with less traditional experience, it's really important that they can show that their experience matches the quality of experiences that the more traditional candidates have. And if they can do that, the fact that it's different will help elevate them a little bit in the process. So I really like, I'm thinking anyway, I really like this person's professional experience. The question, the issue that we have here is obviously the combination of the 317 GRE and the 338 GPA is going to be lower than average at all the schools that they list that they've applied to. So that absolutely would create a little bit of a concern, or would create a concern. So where are they at in the process now? They've been invited to interview at Ross. That's very good. They've got an interview lined up, I think. I don't know if they've interviewed yet, but an interview lined up at Kellogg, which is part of Kellogg's process. So that's very good. So they've got two interview opportunities. They haven't heard back yet from Wharton. They'll hear back this week. Stanford and Anderson, they typically trickle interview invites out, sometimes quite late in the process, so they've not heard from there yet. Anyway, long story short, very good. Ross is interested. So what I did actually, Graham, before coming on air is I went to Livewire. And with the new features that we have, so here's a little plug for all the new features we have on Livewire, I did a filter on Ross.
Okay.
For admits on Ross, looking at GRE scores. And they have admitted people. They have admitted folks with lower GRE scores than 317, according to our Livewire data. I then repeated that search and filter. Salt and filter, I should say, for Kellogg, and all candidates can do these types of searches themselves. And again, Kellogg has admitted folks, as reported on Livewire, with 317 GRE. So, you know, I think this is really interesting because my initial reaction is these numbers are really going to be troublesome, but the person's got invites. They're within range from a number standpoint. Their numbers are not going to compel the application, right? They're going to hold the application back. But if they can really show that the other aspects of the application have real strong quality all the way through, then I think this candidate's very doable at the types of programs that they've applied.
Yeah, so I might get in trouble for saying this, but I think that the GRE is, I feel like schools have more flexibility because it comprises for now a smaller part of the pool in terms of, you know, when you look at who they admit in the at the end of the day, I don't know if it's, you know, 10 or 20% of the kids in the class that maybe did the GRE or whatever it might be. I mean, obviously that balance is shifting. But for now, I feel like schools have more flexibility, if anything, because a lot of the focus is around what's a school's average GMAT score as kind of like a mark of quality, right? And so I think they're just maybe they have more flexibility and are less picky about GRE because, quite frankly, until a couple of years ago, schools weren't even tracking the average for GRE. So it was a great way to bring someone into the program that they believed in who maybe had a subpar score, but it didn't really matter. It didn't impact ranking or anything like that, right? So now the schools are starting to report on these stats, and I think some of the rankings are taking it into account, but it's a small amount of folks. And so I kind of wonder about that. The thing that I like about this candidate, putting my admissions hat on, is that, you know, a lot of people who work in nonprofit and have these types of leadership experiences are still like non-traditionals, meaning they studied like English literature or, you know, something undergrad that doesn't really have a ton of kind of business applicable, you know, skill or, you know, or learning, right, when they were an undergrad. This person, though, was an econ major at a liberal arts university. So I think that works in his or her favor because it means that, you know, they've had some exposure to a lot of the stuff that they would see in a core MBA, core curriculum of an MBA program. And that makes a big difference than say, you know, I applied to business school, got rejected. I was an art history major who had very little exposure to this stuff, right? So I think that may help this person's cause. And, you know, 3.38, it depends. Like if this is a good liberal arts college and, you know, lots of tough, you know, econometrics or, you know, kind of tough econ classes, then it's, you know, it's ballpark, it's fine. It's really the GRE that was kind of more of an outlier type score. But as you say, looks like a search in Livewire reveals that people are getting into some of these top schools with lower GREs. So, I hope this person does well, and they sound enthusiastic, and you know, so far so good. It'd be great if they could update their post or send us an email to let us know how it turns out. But yeah, interesting candidacy, and ideally, you know, they're going to get some offers, and maybe even we'll see, maybe even some scholarship money.
Just to sort of finish up the conversation on the GRE, I just want to make a couple of quick points. One is, regardless of the quality of the work experience, which we believe this is probably high quality experience, but regardless of that quality, the candidate has to demonstrate they will do well and thrive in the academic curriculum of the program to which they plan to attend. So it's not that you have such good work experience, we don't care about it, a 2.5 GPA or a 500 GMAT or something like that, that person would likely clearly struggle in the academic program. So this sort of 3.17 GRE in combo with a 3.38 GPA from the, you know, in economics or whatever it is, has to demonstrate to the ADCOM and give them certainty that the candidate will thrive in the curriculum. And I use the word thrive, not survive, because if you're surviving in an MBA curriculum, you're not having the time and energy to do all the other things that you need to be doing as an MBA student in the extracurricular activities and in the recruiting and so forth. So I want to make that point that that's very important. Secondly, I've heard this argument about the GRE, Graham, and I've heard it, I think, from you, but certainly from others. My counterpoint to that is, if it's a much smaller pool of admitted candidates taking the GRE, then a low GRE score would have a much bigger impact on the average GRE score than if it's a larger pool of admitted candidates taking the score. So you can argue it both ways, is my point. I wouldn't throw it out there that, you know, taking the GRE is the obvious way to try to sneak into a business school. And I'm not saying that you're saying that by any means, but I don't want anyone to interpret it in that way. Overall, I think this candidate has some, hopefully will have some great options, despite, you know, on first cut, looking at the numbers, thinking, well, that could be a problem. I think there's some really interesting things that this candidate probably brings to the table. And the fact that Ross has already invited them for an interview is a very strong early signal to the process.
To me, it means that they executed on their application, you know, that the story's good. One last point on the GRE, I would say that I wonder to what extent non-traditionals and people who business schools may view as like not usually being in the pipeline for business school typically come in with the GRE. And so I wonder if that's why they've been more flexible too, because they want to expand, you know, they want to have these different voices in the classroom. It's really useful. But in any event, so Alex, you mentioned it's nice weather where you are in Cornwall, England today. Am I actually hearing like seagulls in the background? Is that what I was hearing before?
Well, I live on top of a cliff, so seagulls chime in the rain and the wind and the sunshine. So
all right. I'm jealous, yeah. Okay, so I think that kind of wraps up this episode. We will be back next week, as always, with another edition of Wiretaps. And again, stay tuned for that Columbia Admissions Director Q&A podcast. Check out the Super Bowl commercials podcast. And thanks so much to everyone who's written a review. We really appreciate it and love hearing from you. So keep up all the good work, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, best of luck, everybody. Take care.